Today on the Soda Pod, we're diving into the Hoppy Hour. Hoppy back from Hawaii, as you all heard on the last episode. We also got his friend Brian, a regular listener of the show, riding shotgun throughout the episode as well. We got a little bit of NHL talk. We're going to talk in depth about the Danbury Trashers documentary, and we'll touch on some wild tidbits here, all on episode 201 of the Soda Pod. Let's go. From the wild woods of Vancouver Island, welcome to the Soda Pod. Isha Jerome here alongside the state of Hoppy and his friend Brian. Thank you for joining us wherever and whenever you are listening. What's up, boys?
I figured I was the guest, so I would go second. But
I knew that was going to happen. Brian, how are you?
Fuck Hoppy. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Is that right? Is this the 200th episode right now?
201.
201.
Well, I was going to say I'm very honored to be in the 200th episode, but now it's just 201, so it's just water under the bridge.
Hey, but it's the first... Actually, I was going to try to spin it some special way, Brian. We're just glad you're here. Hoppy, how are you?
just sitting back and watching the Twitter world burn after the Vikings game, which, I mean, was going to happen no matter what, but now it's just even funnier, which I thought we were going to get the perfect Vikings outcome being a tie. Just so that they could go 500 this year, but they had to fuck it up right at the end.
Oh, man. Can't say I invested any time in football this Sunday.
Also, is the Canadian Football League not a thing?
Oh, it's a thing.
It's really not. It's really
not on Sundays. Just not on Sundays.
Oh, when do they play? Do they play?
Fridays. Fridays is and midweek sometimes. Wednesdays. The odd Tuesday game here and there.
Oh.
They can't do Saturday because that's NCAA.
the funny thing with that, though, Isha, is I bet there's a lot of high school football games that get more views on a Friday than the CFL does.
Yeah, in the States, not in Canada.
CFL's a fun time. The rules are just nuts.
Yeah, the rules are, I mean, it's a circus, but it's our circus, and I will fucking die on the sword defending the CFL. We'll get into more topics. We'll probably drive this train right off the rails a few more times in the episode, but we'll do that and more in the Hoppy Hour when we get into some hockey talk here. Just want to give a quick reminder to everyone to subscribe, like, and follow the Brewery Travels podcast. It's no longer on the Soda Pod feed. It blew up the first week. The guy got too big for us. We had to get his own feed out there. No, it's great that he had so much success. Our friend Joel from Brewery Travels, and thanks to everyone who's already been reviewing the podcast. It's presented by the Soda Pod. Hoppy and I have been helping them start out, and it's just been so much fun to work with Joel on the production side, and again, support him. If you listen to the Soda Pod, you're probably a fan of craft beer, as I know a lot of you are a fan of craft beer. That is his shtick, as you know, listening to the Soda Pod and him coming on as a guest here, and he's been interviewing some great folks. He's on episode 2. Episode 3 is about to come out, and we have the privy to listen to some of his episodes beforehand, Hoppy, and it's really great stuff. So again, subscribe to the Brewery Travels podcast. It's on Facebook and Twitter as well, so go check that out. Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter at the Soda Pod. Totally interactive on all social media. If you want to interact with us even more, leave us a text or voicemail, 612-324-1684. And finally, before we hop into the Hoppy Hour and talk some beer, the Hockey Podcast Network and the Soda Pod are powered by DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Don't forget to use promo code THPN upon sign up for a bonus. And if you're a regular user, plug that promo code in for a weekly deal. All right, boys, on the other side, let's dive into the Hoppy Hour. You're listening to episode 201 presented by the Hockey Podcast Network.
First, I'd like to propose a toast to UMD goaltender Alex Stalock. To Stalock!
To Stalock!
I love that stuff. Been drinking it for years. You know, I heard they recently decided to add more hops to it.
You're all hopped out?
What's on tap, gentlemen? Hoppy, I'll start with you. Hopefully not Liquid IV again, unless your weekend was just fucking crazy.
Not Liquid IV. We got Northland Vodka right now.
I was drinking
some beer with the football, but actually, went out to an event for Back Channel yesterday called Stonefest, and what it was, they handed you basically a lanyard with a scorecard for mini golf. You can see I spent a lot of time on that. But they actually had a like group brew fest for basically border breweries. So
cool.
Some of their top friends. So we got North Dakota represented by Drecker. Wisconsin is 1840. Illinois is Microphone. And Lua is Iowa. And they basically had a tent set up all across this sculpture garden and like mini golf area. And each tent had like a different style of beer that they were serving up. So you'd have all five breweries available. It delicious and really cool event. I'm definitely not going to run down all of these beers.
Sweet. Oh, fuck. That sounds like a lot of fun. I actually saw back channel for the Vikings first game. They had their Vikings style jersey, the purple, you know, the purple and yellow, but with the back channel logo and everything. And those were just so crisp and clean. I was like, fuck, I'm not even a Vikings fan. And usually I don't dress like Barney, but man, like that would be a nice like looking Barney? Jersey. Isn't that Barney's? The purple dinosaur from our childhood?
Purple and green, not purple and yellow. Oh,
there you go. That serves my memory well. Anyways, Brian, what do you got on tap?
I got the fashion mullet.
Oh, that's a good one.
Lupulin. There you go.
Yep.
It's all reversed here. So business in the front, party in the back. Lupulin Brewery out of Big Lake, Minnesota, up a little north of the Twin Cities, kind of halfway to St. Cloud. But really solid beer, really great IPAs. And now I'm blanking on what their most famous IPA is.
It's funny because it's one that you love and I'm not as big of a fan of. You're talking the Hui?
Yeah, yeah. So we got the Fashion Mullet is a kind of a, let me see here, just a regular IPA with a mix of East Coast hops and West Coast hops. They claim
from east to west.
It drinks like a West Coast IPA for sure.
It does. And then we also got the West Coast Bias, also from Lupulin, that the West Coast Double IPA. So
Hoppy, what are your thoughts on that one? Because that sounds like it's right up your alley.
I haven't had that one, but the can looks beautiful. No,
yeah, that's fucking sick.
I'm not a West Coast IPA guy.
I know, it's just making it harder to find the IPAs to get you. There's excuse number 10, maybe even 201 by the rate we're going.
Out of how many? And that perfect though, Brian. Thanks for teeing that up, because a week from this Wednesday, we're actually having folks from Lupulin jump on for an interview. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We'll see. I might have to, I guess, try that West Coast one or something.
We also got a chocolate peanut butter porter that I'm sure Hoppy would love.
It's yes.
CPB.
Oh, yes. It is.
Good. Well, if Hoppy hits up the brewery or, you know, connects with them again, even as a reminder to come on the podcast, I'm sure he'll have a nice package waiting for him at the brewery. Like usual.
We'll see.
I'm not drinking anything new on this one. I'm still, I still got a couple beers left in this Phillips Electric Unicorn six pack. The white IPA, it's unbelievable. It's usually, like I said, it's usually not on the shelves, you know, come September, but because it did so well in their first summer run a few years ago, now it's one of the flagship beers at Phillips. I have to get this poster for the studio. There's so many cool can art, and the artist, I think there's like a three or four artists they have on staff now, or that they regularly contract there, and they just, all of them are so good. Even some of the beers I don't like, I still like. Just enamored and blown away with the artwork. So there's a few I have to collect. Some of them they archive, which is, that's how they get you as a consumer, right? Like, hey, like we might bring this back as a poster in 5 years, but get it now in, you know, X, Y, and Z coatings at $20 more because it looks sicker and you may never have it again. So at least the Electric Unicorn, it's there to stay. The Pandemonium Hoppy went on their website. I can't find it. So I'll have to wait until next summer for that one again. But shout out Phillips Brewing. Yeah, one of the best breweries on Vancouver Island, if not BC. Look at that. We kept the train on the track in that segment. Stayed with beer. In the intro, I didn't know where we were going to go. Especially what we were talking about before we went on air. But I will not get into that right now. Sure. Let's get into... let's get into the reason Brian joined us here on the other side as we dive into the Danbury Trashers documentary. Now, everyone listening to SodaPod, you know, Brian included, which is why he probably jumped on here to shut me up, is like, hey, Isha, it's been fucking four episodes. Then no one has watched this thing yet. Take a hint. It must suck, you know, because no one wants to talk to you about it here on the podcast. We'll get into all that and more on the other side. You're listening to the SodaPod episode 201 presented by the Hockey Podcast Network. We're the bad boys of hockey. Somebody's getting trashed tonight. Blow the whistle, drop the puck. The visiting team is out of luck. The evil empire don't give in. All right, boys, first hobby, have you fucking seen the thing yet?
Well, I've watched it, yeah, but I want to hear you two go back and forth a little bit before I weigh in. This is going to be fun.
Well, everyone knows my thoughts, and I absolutely loved it, and I've compared it to even, you know, a friend of mine, some of my age, who played junior hockey out here on, you know, Western Canada, BCHL, and AJHL as well, and had an opportunity to take over a junior B team and pretty much did exactly what AJ Galante did, but you know, with 15, 16, 17 year olds, and credit to him, I think 8 of his players went NCAA Division I, you know, 2 years after playing for the junior B team, but he did the exact same thing, built just a bruiser of a team. So that's when I saw the Danbury Trashers document, that's what I first thought of. I was like, man, this is like an ode to, you know, my friend Curtis, who kind of did the same thing on a smaller level. And then, you know, just my love of bruiser hockey, I thought the thing was outstanding. I do know now that Netflix did cut a lot of things from that story. You know, the one tidbit that Hoppy brought on the podcast last week included, where like the whole Thrashers and the NHL's kind of part in that story, it was just non-existent in the Netflix one, because they focused a little bit more on, like, you know, the Galante family. Brian, let's dive into it. Why were you not a fan of this show? Why are you not jumping on the hype train?
Well, so to be clear, you're saying your friend also laundered money through a junior B team.
No, but he, again, smaller scale, but this is what he did. There is a caveat to it. Him and the owners knew exactly what they wanted to do and put each, I think, I don't know the exact number, and Curtis, if you're listening, like, you can fucking give me shit for this after, but I believe it was between 15 and 20 grand aside. And this is junior B again, to pay for the fines that they 100% encourage their boys to, you know, to take, like ripping the face masks right off and telling them to go, like, fill up the penalty box. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And paying for fines is one thing, but
again, junior B level, like in BC, where they just implemented face masks, again, smaller level.
To be clear, I mean, the Galante family were using the Danbury Trashers as a front to launder money for his mob ties, and which led to the 78 count indictment that was filed within 2 years. So, I mean, there's that whole side of it, which, whatever, that's fine. Like, however they get their money, I'm not bringing a problem with that. And I just think the whole style of play that they tried to implement is just kind of cheap and degrading to the game in general. Like, the fact that they got guys in the first game of their inaugural season lining up off the draw to, like, fight someone, it just, I don't think it's good for the game. I don't think it encourages growth of the game or is beneficial in any way. So I don't.
Hey, but it drove revenue for the league. So at the end of the day, it's a business. So I get what you're saying 100%. And that's why it's not in the game today. And this was, again, this was right out of the 90s. So a little bit of a different time. I can empathize with that, but it was good for the game in that league at that time, because it brought more eyes on it in a market where it was saturated by, you know, New Jersey and the New York Rangers and just NHL product.
Well, I guess I disagree with your definition of good for the game. Good for the owners and good for the pocketbook of the league, it, I guess, arguably was in the short term for what it initially drew, but good for the game in general, as in good for hockey or good for the product that league was trying to create, I don't think it was I would argue and disagree that it was good for developing that, because I mean, really, you got guys out there just aiming to injure players and aiming to injure other guys and trying to do whatever they can to get an advantage by just hitting guys and getting in fights and knocking the good players on the other teams out of the game. And I don't think it advances the game or does anything beneficial in that sense.
Yeah. And I get, because like the UHL at the time was kind of in between compared to the East Coast at the time. And well, like the LNAH, which has always been that brand of hockey, right? The crazy Quebec League, which kind of is a WWE freak show over there, where fighting is first. And that's where the fighters go if they want to play that brand of hockey, because that is what the league is. You know, the hockey world knows that that is the place where this type of shit's going to happen. Whereas I see your point there, where Danbury came in and kind of was like, we're going to go full on this LNAH brand of Quebec hockey and, you know, ride this wave during this time and just play this style. And they were the odd ones out. I was talking to a friend of mine who does the Fourth Line Voice podcast, the OG fight podcast out there. None of that hockey fights bullshit. Fuck hockeyfights.com. But anyways, he was telling me that his brother, actually right out of Canadian University Hockey, was drafted to the UHL at the time, because they did a Canadian import draft. And his buddy, who was on, I believe he got drafted by Kalamazoo, which at the time the Wings were playing in the UHL. And he said, like, straight up, like, you're a tough guy. We only got one tough guy here. There's this Danbury team that's got 10 guys. Like, if you have a chance, go to the East Coast if you want to play that skilled game. If you want to come here and bruise and, you know, get the limelight on you, then sure. But I'm just warning you, we have one tough guy on our team. We're in Danbury's division. You're going to have to fight 10 of them. So players did have a choice when they were in that time to join that league and go to different places. And ultimately, like, let's be honest, man, the UHL, they weren't moving the needle. They knew at the time they weren't growing the game. That was on even the AHL, the NHL, and the European leagues, respectively, those big ones over there who are really going to grow the game. So I get that you don't like that brand of hockey, and I can't argue with your stance there, because sure, no one wants to see anybody get hurt. And I don't think that's exactly what it's all about, but sure, it's a byproduct of that style, 100%. But as far as moving the needle and growing the game, like, let's be real, man. Like, the UHL wasn't going to move shit. They just made a crazy documentary and a good story at the end of the day.
Yeah. I'll give you that. And anytime you have mob ties involved with purchasing a team and starting a franchise,
it's not going to end well.
Well, no, I mean, it makes a story, that's for sure. And that's what they did. And that's what it ended up being. It obviously didn't last long. I just, in preparing for this, I just learned about 20 minutes ago that there were actually two seasons to this, yep, which I wasn't clear on in the Netflix documentary.
Yeah, because he was in high school for the first one, and then university for the... It wasn't as clear in then, but looking at DB right after, it was like, oh yeah, he did mention he was in high school at one point, and then also university at one point in it too, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, for the sake of making a story, that's fine. Like, it made an interesting Netflix documentary 17 years later. I guess the reason I got so amped about it with Hoppy was because I had a few beers before I texted him. And I was listening to your podcast and heard you say that you said something along the lines like the greatest sports documentary you've ever seen. And I was like,
hey, I did say bias filled 100%, because I love old school hockey and I am a hockey guy first. So, you know. You can rip on me for that 100%, but I did throw a caveat there to defend myself. But one thing I do impressed is the wrong word, but was very interesting was the fact that, like, yeah, I will agree with your stance that, like, of course this brand at the end of the day is not good for growing the game, and it was unfair because, yes, Jimmy Galante paid these guys way more than they were allowed to in the league, and that's what made for them to have so much success right away. It wasn't fair. I'll give them that 100%. It generated revenue for the league, whatever. That was part of my original argument. But the kid is who impressed me the most. Jimmy, like, whatever, man, he's fucking Tony Soprano. He's a piece of shit mobster, right? Like, he's probably, I don't even want to say probably, he's 100% got blood on his hands. So I don't, like, respect that guy. But what AJ did with the tools he had at a young age, but like, to be honest, he knew what was going on with his father, but not to the extent that anyone at that age would probably be privy to. He went in there and did his job, and he looked at like old school hockey DB, you know, before it even, not that it's that much advanced today, because I know the owner, I've spoke with him personally at some times. I know he likes to keep it old school, but like he did his own research at the time and could have just asked his dad to do all the work. And hey, daddy, I need this and this and that. Sure, he took his dad's money and Jimmy did some of the negotiating, but he got agents to actually take those meetings. He had a vision for the team that, you know, as president and general manager, he implemented more than his dad, who wasn't a hockey guy. So again, unfair playing field, had assets to create his team, but I still give the kid props. And we saw at later in the documentary how bad he felt, right? And how like he didn't even want to, he couldn't even talk about the Trashers for like I said, 17 years, but he still found that the guy still had drive and passion and had work ethic. You know, he wasn't just a spoiled brat, right? Like he worked for 10 years as a, you know, as a blue collar, you know, worker type of guy in the trades, and then went back into the sports entertainment, into boxing, and came around full circle. So I did like how I went in hating both the two characters, right? In the beginning of the documentary, especially when you saw how AJ dressed, I was like, this early 90s wankster, what the fuck, man?
Jinko.
Yeah, yeah. But then towards the end, I was like, you know what? Like, I respect him. Jimmy, he's just a character in the story. I like him like I like Tony Soprano, because I love the Sopranos. But I will give credit to the kid. Like he at least worked. And I respect work ethic.
That's a fair take. And it was impressive seeing the way, oh, and the other thing, as I'll say, is, I mean, I'm always hesitant with the amount of credit I give to these type of documentaries, kind of similar to like the Making a Murder documentary, that like, well, when you just play one side of it or do like the producers are clearly like
telling a story
in the light. Yeah. Painting this in the light of the Trashers and like, hey, here's what they did, or here's what this kid did.
Yeah, like I said, they didn't talk about probably the thousands of people or maybe the hundreds of people that died in whatever, you know, mob type wars that happened as a result. I know Jimmy was the garbage guy and laundered the money through there, but let's be honest, like the Italian mobs at the time, even up here in Canada, very close to New York, like shit, man, Montreal was throwing coke and weed right down the border, up and down. I know I've been watching a lot of like mob stories since then in Canada anyways. And like, yeah, Galante's name came up in every single one of these, you know, doc pieces that I've watched.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously going into it with the caveat that like, well, take it for what it's worth, given the fact that these producers are clearly creating this documentary to put a light on the Trashers and kind of build up their story. It was interesting and impressive in the fact that kind of AJ was kind of the analytics guy and doing this, like building this team with Hockey DB and YouTube Fights or whatever it was in 2004 before.
Well, hockey forums too. Yeah. Hockey forums were a huge thing back then.
It's impressive that you built a team based on that. And who knows what kind of went in behind the scenes of it or kind of how exactly that happened. And obviously it's hilarious to see a guy like Mike Rupp show up for 15 games.
John Morasti was there too, man. Like he just smelt blood and he knew, he's like, oh, I'm going to get some fucking ice time on this team.
Oh yeah. I mean, honestly, like I would love to see a Netflix documentary just like falling around a bunch of NHL guys like through the lockouts. Like I know, I think it was the latest lockout. I don't think it was the 04 lockout because that was before Biz Nasty got in the league. But like, I think he went over and played in England.
Yeah, he played in the EIHL.
And just tore it up. Like, I think he was averaging like 6 points a game or something in the English like pro league. And it's like, he's probably the only guy with any NHL experience that ever played in the English pro league, but hey, good for him. Like, I would love to see a documentary just following guys around. Like how did you spend your lockout? Like,
seriously, that would be sweet.
I don't think North America depends on fighting anymore, to be perfectly honest. They depend on that high-paced skill. People want to watch the McDavid-style players. They want to watch Kaprizovs. But the minor leagues still do. And whether for good or for bad, more people are going to come to the minor leagues to watch skill, sure, but prospects, yeah, but then bruisers at the end of the day. That's anyways, maybe it's a different in the US and Canada, because again, NCAA, there's no fighting, right, in the NCAA hockey. Whereas in junior, especially out west, there's still somewhat of an emphasis on, like, you have to be a tough Canadian player, even if you're playing first line. Like, if someone's got to answer the bell if they fuck with you, sort of thing. Now, it's diminished quite a bit. Don't get me wrong. Like,
well, and sorry to interrupt, but there is a big difference in the issue that I had with this Danbury Trashers documentary.
Okay, so you're not like against fighting its entirety. I'm just curious.
There's a time and a place.
Some people are all on that end and don't want to see it at all and think it's just madness, right? So, okay, we've cleared that up.
No. I think there's certainly a time and a place for it, but it's one of those things where, like, before the season even started and on the opening drop of, like, the inaugural face-off of your franchise, you're going to have a guy just, like, throw down. Like, don't tell me that is, like, sending a message protecting a player or, like, trying to change the tone of a game. Like,
that's sideshow shit. That's what they wanted, which is just fucking crazy.
and that's my point, is that's what they wanted. They wanted a sideshow. They wanted to just turn this into UFC on ice, which, I mean, if you're into it, maybe you could be the next Dana White of UFC on ice.
Hey, dude, if I had all the WWE people coming out to my birthday party, I'd probably want that, right?
Right. Just like, give me an octagon on ice. That was insane. I want the fence to be iced. I want the posts to be ice, like, just ice it out, and everyone else skates on.
Have you seen the second Goon movie? Goon 2?
No.
Okay, well, there's a scene in it where, like, ex-pro players will go to this, like, fucking hick-ass arena, and they just basically have a line brawl, or, like, go to center ice and just fight, and it's just like a... You know, it's just like a fighting event, and that's in the movie. I found out that there's actually one of those in Saskatchewan, where literally, like, men's league or ex-pro players will just go to a rink, throw on the skates and hockey gear, and just fucking go toe-to-toe, like, blue team, red team, go. And they just fucking give her and just fight until last one standing. That's how crazy Canada is, especially in the prairies, man. It's just insane.
No, I mean, it's cheap entertainment, and I get that, and there are places like Iowa and South Dakota and Saskatchewan, like Manitoba, I'm sure, that they love it. And they'll, I mean, here's the thing. If I can get a ticket for $5 and get beers for $1 a piece and go watch, like, shit hockey that just has 15 fights a game, like, yeah, I'll go get drunk. Like, if I'm 19, 20, I'll go get drunk on a Friday night and watch a shitty hockey and a bunch of guys fighting each other. Like, have at it. But I don't think it benefits the game at all. I mean, it seems like we're on the same page with that it's a sideshow, that it is just designed to be cheap entertainment.
Well, what I liked was he admitted it at the end of the documentary. We were the bad boys. We were the sideshow. We were the bad guys never win. And I was like, fucking rights, man. At least he wasn't like butthurt that, like, you know, we didn't win after all this. We deserve it. He's like, no. We're like, we were the bad boys. The bad boys don't win. And we didn't win on the ice. You know, they didn't win the championship. They didn't, you know, even in their first year. Yeah, they made the playoffs, but they didn't win the championship. They got to the finals their second year. And then ultimately, because of all the illegal shit, the team was shut down. I really liked that line that AJ admitted that and said that in the documentary.
It's definitely not the greatest sports documentary I've ever seen in my life. I was thoroughly entertained because, like you said, like, if you've seen Sopranos and you realize that this is even loosely tied, that's pretty cool. But I mean, yeah, I'm with Brian that it's a sideshow, but I get why they did it. I don't know if it necessarily hurts or helps hockey, but, you know, when we're talking about the UHL of all things, but for me, honestly, watching this, that there was two people that stood out to me that, like,
oh, yes,
I thought really enhanced this.
I know exactly one of them.
Well, one of them is that strange couple that just kept on being brought in. And
right?
That lady. I want to meet her.
Probably could. She's probably outside Danbury right now signing autographs.
I guarantee it, yeah.
I don't even know where to start with her. Like, the best, it like comes out of one of the scenes when they're talking about like one of the games being a shit show, and it's just him being like, she was fucking drunk.
Honestly, like, go to the like main gas station in Danbury, Connecticut, like 12 hours, sit outside that gas station. I guarantee you, I'll find her buying scratchers.
Buddy, within like, 4 hours, Danbury ain't that big.
Like, I guarantee you'll find her. It doesn't take long.
They reminded me of like junior A or junior B, you know, season ticket holders out here in Canada. Like, every rink, every team has that couple, and it's amazing.
Interesting. And then, so before the other character that I thought was just beyond interesting, Beanut, I had to throw this one to you because I couldn't like separate this from my brain as I watched. The dad, right? Jimmy. He absolutely gave me all of the like vibes and had the same kind of cadence with how he talked as Mac's dad in Always Sunny.
I don't watch I haven't seen the show, so I don't know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got you. Yeah, that's fair. Like
if you rewatch it, you're only gonna hear Mac's dad for those interviews now. So Mac's dad is a convict. At various parts of the show, he's either in or out of prison. And, well, Mac's whole goal is to have his dad be proud of him. So he tries to be hard all the time. And, man, there's just some moments in there where, like, him and Charlie think they're being badasses. And the dad's like, the fuck are you talking about? And then throws something that's, like, 10x that at them. Like, hey, can you guys smuggle heroin in here through your ass? And they're like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, you get a balloon, you put heroin in there, and you stick it up your asshole. And then you bring it in here, and you shit it out, and you give it to me. And they're like, oh, but maybe that. And then they leave and come back like, so we didn't bring the heroin, but guess what we did do? But like this guy, like he's like just big, beady eyes, slick back hair, and he just has the same talking cadence where it's like, I can't even explain it, man. I don't know if you, again, listen to another interview with Jimmy and you will absolutely hear it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anytime there's a scene with Mac's dad, you just feel like, all right, like this guy's up to something illegal. Like, don't know why, like, but like, just, yeah, got like crazy shifty eyes and he's just like, what do you need to do? And just like
even when he's smiling, he's frowning sort of thing, or like just intense.
Yeah. And just like, you're terrified of the guy and can't trust him. And just like, whatever I do, I don't want to piss this guy off. And yeah, definitely the same feeling that you got with Jimmy in that whole documentary. But it's, I don't know. I will recommend, there's a documentary that was on NBCSN a few years ago on the Summit series. That I'm sure you've seen a lot more because it's a much bigger deal in Canada. But talking about sports documentaries, that was fantastic. Anyway, talking about the sports documentaries, it had me thinking about great hockey documentaries. And I was like, you know what? That Summit series, just like given the timing of it and like everything going on in the world and the way it went back and forth between Canada and Russia, like, that was nuts. Yeah,
that one was really good. What I really want to see is that one World Junior one where Canada and Russia just had that line brawl and overseas, and they had to like turn off the lights and like evacuate the arena because they just wouldn't stop. It was like right like during the Cold War, and Theo Fleury was on that team because I remember him. He talked about that in his book, and there's just not enough footage and not enough coverage of that to do like a documentary or a story on it without just like the YouTube footage or whatever camera footage they have already. Then would have to do interviews, which I'm sure someone's already did, but the fact that like, again, Netflix was able to do this because they had all that footage from Danbury too, where like, you know, AJ probably had a little video camera half the time too, and the fans and all that shit. So like, we're lucky to a certain degree that like they had that footage, that audio, all that content to be able to make something like that. Just kind of like the Last Dance one with the Bulls. Like, again, we're talking about how like production, you know, makes the story what they want. Like, Michael Jordan had Final Cut on that thing, so obviously there's some shit that we're like missing out of that Last Dance documentary. But again, going back to the Trashers, like, because there's not a lot of hockey stuff out there, that's why I liked it so much. Where I'm like, okay, like this now is going to be one of the main hockey documentaries that people go and watch, for better or for worse than Growing the Game, Brian. But Hoppy, let's go back to your favorite character.
Oh, so
and I know who better it is.
Do you?
Oh yeah.
Let's hear it.
The equipment manager?
The equipment manager named T-Bone.
Oh my God,
fucking time they pan over to him to talk about this shit, right up in the camera, smoking his cigar. The fact that he brought him in because this is the guy that coached youth hockey. Like, at what point would you be okay being like, yeah, I'm going to leave Johnny here to play hockey with T-Bone, who's fucking wrecking kids out there to try and relive the glory days?
Oh, but he's like, I needed someone crazy. This guy's the craziest motherfucker I've ever met.
Just listening to his interview, man, like he was off the rails the entire time. There was no bigger wild card in all of this than T-Bone.
No other professional sports equipment manager has been suspended seven days? Like it was a week or seven games? It was like a crazy amount of time. I love the stories of what he did too. I'd like replace the away towels with like these just little strips of like fucking fabric or toilet paper or whatever. And and that one scene where, like, Brian, when you said, like, off the opening face-off when his name escapes me. He was just on Fourth Line Voice, too. But that big bruiser that they followed in the documentary, too, how he, like, looked at Jimmy and, like, you know, because Jimmy gave him the nod before to have the line bro right off the bat.
Wingfield?
Yeah, Wingfield. Yeah. He was just on as a guest on Fourth Line Voice podcast talking about that time. But how when that story was talked about in the documentary, when the equipment manager was commenting on it and how he's like almost tearing up and he's like, guys, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I'm like, oh my God, you are psycho. You're crazy. He is my favorite. He's my favorite character 100%. I want to meet that guy.
Just talking about Brad Wingfield in the second season, like that they existed, 36 games played, 320 penalty minutes.
Like, yeah.
How you average 10 minutes a game in 36 games is...
He put up some points that year too, right?
No.
No? Okay.
He had 9 points. Three goals, 6 assists.
So I was listening to the podcast and he was like, oh, I was on pace for actually a decent point total too, you know, considering what I was doing. And I didn't look it up. I didn't see the numbers.
Yeah. No, and yeah, that's the thing. I got HockeyDB up here for that team because I'm trying to figure out like the... back and forth, but like
those brothers, one of the brothers was unbelievable in that second season. What, like 87 points or something, like 40 goals?
Better than the Sedins, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't even twins and they were able to fucking light it up.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
No, I think one has a couple years on the other.
Oh, I thought they said they were twins.
No, yeah, they're 3 years apart.
Okay, yeah.
According to HockeyDB.
That's a weird twin. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it happens though, you know, sometimes.
Oh man. All right, Hoppy. So you dug the equipment manager. What else? Oh, you know, baby. What other takeaways from that that show?
I mean, my biggest disappointment is that the inspiration for him to be this big like hockey junkie was Mighty Ducks.
I know.
Fucking gross.
I know.
I don't know. Brian, how do you feel about the Mighty Ducks?
I mean, I love it. Like the fact that you guys had like the whole story is based on him getting community service for a DUI and he has to like go be a youth hockey coach. It's like, well, yeah, clearly what this guy needs is to influence young minds. So
just like T-Bone.
Just like T-Bone. Exactly.
Yeah, right. Honestly, like the connections between the Mighty Ducks and the Danbury Trashers are probably more than they like to admit.
Yeah, that's like, true. Uh-oh. That's true. Now that I think of it, that's hilarious. It's funny because like as a kid, I was like, I love the Mighty Ducks. Obviously, like there's not even a nostalgia factor. Like I'll go and watch Space Jam every now and then and still be like, fucking rights. I watched Mighty Ducks. And I was like, how did I ever like this shit? Like,
oh, yeah. It's so great. And it's like, who's going to take the penalty shot? Like, well, which one of your moms is single? Charlie, you're taking the penalty shot.
Attaboy. Emilio, the Mighty Duck Man, I swear to God.
Holy shit. That is, that I have no rebuttal to that. It's all accurate. You heard it here first.
You guys see Knight the Roxbury? Come on. I don't know if all our listeners have, but anyways. All right, let's turn the page. Let's talk a little bit of wild talk here on episode 201 of the Soda Pod presented by the Hockey Podcast Network. 1 may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off week 2, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any Week 2 game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook is not yet available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season with their daily fantasy contest. DraftKings is giving away all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or Indiana 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Hoppy, your season ticket draft went unbelievable. I saw you tweeted the results. You messaged me the results too. Let's dive into it. What were your winnings, sir? What games are you heading to this year?
I mean, I gotta preface this with saying that, like, I've been in a lot of drafts, whether it's for like fantasy football, fantasy hockey, whatever. I've dominated a lot of them. I have never dominated a draft or worked the table the way that I did in this draft here. We literally had a seven, like our top seven going in. I don't know why it was seven, but we had seven. Probably something that Quali decided with the math. And out of our top seven, we got five. And that's in a four-person snake. So we were thrilled. We had a couple of scares, though. We got first overall pick, and we had to take the season opener. We get to see him play Winnipeg. It's going to be a lot of fun. Then our number two pick was the Chicago Blackhawks playing at 1 o'clock on a Saturday, the weekend that people are going to be celebrating St. Patty's Day. And right away, someone's like, yeah, we'll take the Chicago on Saturday. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, yeah, the 22nd in January. I'm like, what? Okay, cool. Then the next pick was someone trying to take the Pittsburgh Penguins game that was November 6th, which was in Pittsburgh. So that's how we started the draft off. And we rolled from there. We ended up getting all the way back to 8 with that Chicago Blackhawks game we wanted. Took the Penguins right after that. And then from there just rolled with some of the better, like, because everyone wanted to have weekend games and we just cared about having good games. So we get to see Carolina. We get to see Dallas, Islanders, Tampa, Edmonton, and got Philly for Joe because I'm nice, I guess. It's going to be kind of gross. And then the insignificant game was the second to last game of the year against Calgary. So Calgary was the least enticing game across the league.
Yeah, they're the wild card in the Pacific. Anyways, we got a few minutes left. Let's dive into some more of our wild topics here, or just the hockey topics in general, Hoppy. Let's start with Koivu. Back in the news as he's set to join the Wild in a management role next season.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, first, it's just good to have people like that stay in the organization, but also probably tells you that the whole, like, parting of ways with Parisi and Suter couldn't have been, like, that big of a deal or ruffling of feathers because, like, he was pretty much at the hip with them as the leadership group for the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So clearly there's no ill will there. My really only concern with this is now we've got people – again, screaming from the top of a mountain that they want his jersey retired immediately. And I'm not on that train.
Brian, what are your thoughts?
I see Hoppy's side of it, and I see the other people's side of it. I think there are bigger issues in this franchise than deciding who gets their jersey retired. but that being said, I mean, I don't think it matters. Like, if you want to retire the guy's jersey, go for it. Cause, like, given what he's contributed to the organization, and I understand Hoppy's going to say, or other people argue that, like, oh, you shouldn't retire as early because, like, he's not even the leading goal scorer for the franchise, given they played here for 15 years. But my issue is that, well, people get upset about the fact that he wasn't contributing offensively as much, but it's one of those things that he, I mean, that's not his game, and that never was his game, and that was never going to be his game. I mean, it's going into it, you got to understand that he's a defensive centerman that is out there to win draws in the defensive zone and kill penalties. And that's what he did, and he was good at it, and he contributed in that sense, and that's what you asked him to do. If you were paying him to be your goal-scoring center and he didn't kill penalties and he didn't take face-offs in the defensive zone, then that would be a bigger issue if he didn't contribute offensively. But you never asked him to do that, and he didn't do that because that's not the style of game that he played. So for what right. we asked him to do, he contributed and he played his role. And the thing is, I mean, if he was on any other team, he would play the exact same role. And he was a solid defensive center, and he did what he was asked to do, and he contributed, and he was a solid captain, solid team leader, and a solid centerman for what we asked. And the fact that we didn't have anyone to contribute offensively isn't on him. Like, it's not something we can hold against him in retrospect, looking back on his career, because, well, that we knew that's not who he was, and that's not who he was ever going to be. So I think we should let that go and just evaluate his career on based on what we asked him to do and what he did do. And I think he met that criteria, and that we should accept that. And, I mean, given the state of the franchise and how young it is and how kind of the lack of superstars that they had that they've held on to, if you want to retire some guy's jersey, because it's been, correct me if I'm wrong here, Abby, what, 21 years we've been a franchise?
Yep.
So if you want to retire a guy's jersey, he's been, that's what played his whole career here, like with an asterisk. I think
he has not played his whole career here.
He played every full season he played for the Wild. How about that?
Okay.
Based on that, I've got no problem retiring his jersey. I mean, I think that's fine. Okay. Also, I think if you're going to retire his jersey, there's a conversation to be had about retiring Nick Backstrom's jersey. But
I know. Oh, great. He wants more jerseys retired. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, because it's like, okay, well, then is that not the bar then? Because look, I don't refute anything that you say, Brian, but it's like, is that, I guess this franchise for franchise can determine the value of the player and who they want to honor, sure. But it's just like you see league-wide that, like, there's Ring of Honor players who mean a lot to the franchise and have done everything you said that Koivu did everything that they asked for. I mean, again, Vancouver Canucks example, like Olin, Burrows, I'm sure Kessler is going to go up in the Ring of Honor too. But, like, retiring a number is for something unique, special, you know, the Pavel Burres of the world sort of thing. So I'm giving the Vancouver example.
Well, and my point is that how long have the Canucks been a franchise?
Oh, way longer. So I'll give you that. Yeah, like double the time, 50 years or whatever.
All right. Well, while you're pulling that up, let me first say that if they retire his number, I'm not going to, like, lose it. I'm more upset that people think that it's, like, such a no-brainer decision and they're screaming for it when I just don't think there's the support there. Like, yeah, he did exactly what you asked him to do. There's not many second, third-line defensive centers that are getting their jerseys retired. He meant a ton to this franchise, and I'm with Isha that it should absolutely be a Ring of Honor type thing, but, like, I just... At the end of the day, let's just say things don't blow up in our face and Kaprizov plays his entire career with the Wild. You don't think it's weird seeing those two jerseys next to each other and saying, yep, these are equally important.
It's not a stationary target. It's not a stationary, like, standard. Like, the amount that somebody contributes to a franchise when they're still in their infancy, which, I mean, when Koivu got to the Wild, I would argue that they were still in their infancy of a franchise, especially given that they didn't get to start like the Golden Knights did, that the Wild started and were significantly handicapped against the rest of the league. And so the fact that you brought someone like Koivu in.
Yet they beat Vancouver in the playoffs 2 years in, but anyways.
Yeah, and they beat Colorado and like had a miraculous run, but I mean,
better than Columbus, but yeah, we understand what you're getting at.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I don't think that the comparison for like the standard for when you retire someone's jersey can be the same when it's a brand new franchise versus when the franchise has existed for 19, 18 years, 20 years before you brought in somebody from Russia like Kaprizov that has a great career. So I think that the, like, I understand what you're saying, that Koivu next to Kaprizov, assuming Kaprizov has this like fantastic career that we're all hoping and expecting he does, and it all ends up being in Minnesota. Yeah, they are going to be on two very different levels, but given where they came into the Wild's franchise and when they came in, I don't think it would be weird that they have their jerseys retired next to each other. The other thing I would say is, does the Wild have a Ring of Honor right now? Or would Koivu be your first entry into the Ring of Honor? Because I think that's weirder.
No, I think that would be a statement. Like, you know, there's the, this sets the bar of like, this is how the franchise is going to honor their players.
I get what Beanut's saying. He like the longevity, everything he meant to the franchise. I'm just saying, look at every other franchise. At one point, they would have been in the same infancy of their team, and they never just gave someone a jersey retirement.
Well, so Koivu came into the Wild in 05, and he stayed for 15 years through 2020. So, like, he came in when the Wild were 5 years old, which clearly is...
Yeah, but do you hang someone's jersey up because they stayed with the team? Like, I don't give a shit about, like, that they're professional athletes. They can choose to make their money anywhere they want.
Yeah, but here's the
thing. Like, I don't know that does that, like, again, Ring of Honor is honoring the player. Retiring the jersey, I mean, it's almost like something superior than just, you are really important to this franchise and we love you.
Yeah, but at the same time, if he wasn't contributing to the franchise would have moved on the exact same way a player would move on if they had the choice. So, I mean, the fact is, like, Koivu stayed, the Wild stayed. Like, he was obviously contributing.
No, and the theme of the Wild is that they stayed. They were always either first team in, last team out, or last team in, first team out.
They moved on from Gabrick. They moved on from, I mean, and this is going to...
I was more taking a shot, Brian, saying that the Wild were never anything better than a bubble team. They were never any worse than a bubble team either.
I was going to say, New York didn't come calling for Koivu too, or else he would have been fucking gone.
I think it's different given the fact that, I mean, when someone starts and essentially ends their career with the same team.
I like how we keep using that word essentially. And the bigger thing, Brian, hey, well, I'm gonna lawyer you quick, Brian. I'm very fluent in bird law. The amount of times that you said he's solid at something throughout the description of Mikko Koivu is exactly my point. He's solid at a bunch of things.
Okay.
You couldn't name one thing that he was great at.
No, not that he's bad.
He's great in the D-zone. He's great at penalty kill.
That's basically the same as D-zone.
Well, yes and no. I mean, like, there's even strength D-zone and there's penalty kill. Like,
again, I'm going to bring a local example because I'm from Vancouver, but like I was even borderline with Trevor Linden getting his jersey retired. I was like, I don't even know if he's at that level. And he came back to Vancouver. He never wanted to leave in that trade when he was traded. And yeah, he was a better scorer, I'd say, than Mikko Koivu, but still did not reach that level where I was like, I know how much the guy means to the franchise. I still am on the fence of Trevor Linden getting up there. And that's me as a Vancouver Canucks fan saying that. So that's just where I'm coming from. Again, we've gone full circle. At the end of the day, I don't really care. Yeah, Hoppy's going to be featuring that Columbus jersey eventually in the stream because we're
the best jersey he's ever worn. It is.
I know Brad's going to roll his eyes on that when he sees that. But it's just interesting that like there's such a conversation to be had. Yeah, no, and there's just such a conversation to be had on this player in particular. It's just interesting. From someone who hasn't been in the Wild, like following the Wild and covering them for too long, it was a little bit weird to me to see how much you guys were passionate about this player when I first started covering. Now I kind of understand, but I think this was like a healthy conversation on like throwing comparables out there and just kind of gauging, okay, well, what would other markets value their similar type of players on? And Brian, you did a great job of, and I appreciate of highlighting, well, the Wild were different because of, you know, X, Y, and Z, infancy of the team. There weren't any other players like that. The longevity that Koivu did play. So I get that. And I'm sure like Brett's just swooning at every word you utter in support of Koivu. We're a little bit over time here, boys. Was there anything else you wanted to highlight before we wrap things up?
I would just say it's going to come up, and I'm surprised you haven't taken jabs at me already for this. But going into the season, both Malkin and Crosby will not be playing. Which, I mean, goes hand in hand with how they always start the season off so poorly. We can talk about that if you want in a later episode, but I had to bring it up because, Brian, you and Horgan and Palmer and Kelsey all come out to visit me in Chicago. Then what happens?
Oh, so this is the weekend of the drinking ranch and the
drinking ranch.
Like six guys sleeping on a futon and a bed and Nate sleeping in the kitchen, like with his head on an inflatable mattress. But then Nate like asks if he can use Hoppy's computer to like look up where the pizza restaurant is. And he opens up his laptop, and the first page open of the laptop is my fantasy hockey team, like the dashboard for it. And yeah. Nate's in that league, and Nate just goes like, what the fuck? Like Scott's been running this whole team. And I was like, I was busy.
I paid him, but
yeah. I was like,
you're no different than the Galantes, Brian.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, hey,
it's full circle.
Right. I'm like, hey, I'm delegating, you know, like subcontracting it out. So,
well, Brian, you got to add the caveat now. You corrected me after we released the episode with that story about the sandwich place that we ended up late at night. There's a little piece that I missed at the end. You can kind of take it from there.
Yeah. So, Isha, in this story that Hoppy told about stealing a sandwich
from
a place, so that was me. And it is 2021 now, so we're past the statute of limitations, so I can go full honesty on this one. We went in, and they ordered sandwiches, and I had just dropped an absurd amount of money at the bar, because I was not used to Chicago bar pricing. So I was like, well, I was used to Bemidji, which is like dollar drinks. So I just dropped an absurd amount of money, but I was really hungry. And we're sitting there waiting, and they call out this sandwich, and they're like, Jeremy, Jeremy, Jeremy. And I look around, and there's no Jeremy in the restaurant. And I was like, all right. I was like, I'm Jeremy. And they look at me, and they're like, they gave me a look like, why did it take you so long to like claim this? And I like grabbed the sandwich from him, and then like he holds it and like won't give it to me. And then he goes, what's on the sandwich? And I'm like, ham? And he goes, all right. And I go out the door and just like run around the corner and start eating the sandwich. And it's like a chicken, like a fried chicken and waffle sandwich. There's nothing close to ham on this sandwich. And I don't think that they had ham on their entire menu. Cause like this entire restaurant is just all like crazy sandwiches.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't even think they sold ham, but I told this guy ham and he was like, all right, sounds good. Like,
he just needed an answer. He just wanted some sort of answer.
It must've been, but yeah, that was a long weekend.
But,
it was fun.
That was a good story on Make Good Choices. Brian, this has been so much fun. Thanks to everyone tuning in on Google, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Folks, the best thing you do for us this week, any week, is to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. If you're jonesing for more hockey content, I know it's right around the corner, but go listen to our website, thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. On your app, please download the episodes before you listen, as it just helps our business. You can follow myself at VI Sports Talk. You can follow the Soda Pod on Twitter and Facebook at the Soda Pod. Hoppy, where can they find you?
Find me at State of Hoppy most places.
You follow the networks again, Hockey Podcast Network at Hockey Pod Net, and you know, we've been resharing and stuff in regard, resharing all the posts and stuff in regards to Pigskin and the Basketball Podcast Network. Again, Brian, this has been a ton of fun. Hoppy, fun as usual. Signing off, I'm Isha Dromi alongside the State of Hoppy. And Brian, this has been the Soda Pod presented by the Hockey Podcast Network. We good, boys?
We good.
Don't fear. Just drink some beer. It was a pleasure, Brian. Stay wild.